I have landed on another planet. I know that. I speak and teacher stares at me and sighs, tapping her long glistening gel nails on the desk or fidgets with something. She mouths instructions slowly at me, her voice rising, moving her angelfish lips in slow motion. She thinks this will make me understand. I am a nuisance to her. I only use short sentences, 4 or 5 words at most. Even then, the sounds that come out of my mouth are guttural, senseless stones that fall unconnected and meaningless into the damp Irish air around me. The noises I make are like foul curses to my ear. Some of the adults think I am thick. This is the word the Irish use to describe people who cannot learn quickly. It is a pejorative term. They do not say it to me, but I have eyes to see and ears to hear. Their slow diction, their octopus gestures, hands waving in the air as if they can knead the meaning into shapes I will comprehend. I am not so thick. I do not understand what they think of me. Sweetheart, they mean well, my mother says to me. They mean well. Like hell they do. In Albania, I achieved silver medals and award certificates for my essays, my art and music. I was popular. Swimming, dancing. I could run like the wind through the forest. And on sports day, I was leader of the youth team in my region. The teachers respected me. I wanted a future. My friends would be amazed by this place, this Irish school. To see me, an island floating in a green ocean, disconnected in the middle of 30 interconnected landmasses. The girls in my class are like girls in my country. On the outside, they laugh and joke, cry and hug a lot. They are plenty different too. They're louder, more confident. They say anything they want to adults. I blush at some things they talk about. Mostly they gossip about boys. To meet a boy is to kiss a boy. And shift a boy, well, I don't know this word at all. In the dictionary it says to move something. The dictionary can be wrong. This is true. I have found lots of words have 2 or more meanings in Ireland. My classmates plan and dream about what they will do when they grow up. They have money to spend on One Direction tickets, horse riding lessons, dance classes, stage school. So foolish, my mother says. I look at her wiping her table quickly. I see the guilt in her deep brown eyes. She will never be able to give me these sorts of things. Even though we share a desk, a book box, Hannah and I, she might be sitting 4,000 kilometres away from me. She doesn't understand anything I say. Hannah and her friends do not have the time to listen or patience to wait for my slow pronunciation. I have learned to put my face into a frozen landscape, like the lake I skate on back in Albania. The mirror on my bedroom door, I talk to myself in it and practice my face. Nobody will know how I feel or what I think. They cannot have any part of me if they cannot hear me. I watch them, trying to read me like I am a book they can pick up and flick through, and then discard, throwing it back under a heap of better books with brighter, more colourful covers. Why are we here? What made my parents move so far from their home? My dad says a better life for us all. This is what matters, money and family. Albania will always be home to them. They are building a big house there for us to all return to. We are welcomed when we go back, as if we were lottery winners, the famous family who have made it big. The house we are building is beside the single-room cottage my grandparents still live in, with no electricity or running water. I will never show the pictures of this cottage to my Irish class. I would be mortified. Irish girls put a lot of stock in wealth, and houses are how you proclaim it. Our new house in Albania looks out of place. A building from the 21st century parachuted in from wealthy Ireland onto a poor Albanian village. In history, we did the Irish famine villages. They looked like my home village. Even the older women in long skirts and headscarves could have been Albanian. In the brick garage my father has built beside our new house, my grandfather and uncles keep their horses and wooden carts. There are big stone columns and enormous glass windows in the house. It has to look the part. My father yearns to be the returning hero. He likes the attention wealth brings. He is like so many men. They must build something colossal to show people their worth. The Irishman, Paddy the Builder, is my father's boss here. He gives him work called nixers and pays under the table. He pays my dad cash and does not pay tax. Irish bosses are not unlike Albanian bosses. My mother cleans the homes of Irish women who do not like to clean for themselves. They go to the gym or hairdresser and leave her the keys. Some of the girls in my class probably have my mother as their cleaner. I hear them talk about the non-national cleaner who comes on Friday afternoons to clean their homes. I never say anything. I hope they never know. In Albania, my mother is highly regarded in our village for her dressmaking skills. She has embroidered wonderful tablecloths, beautiful linen, dresses for all occasions. I am learning off her. She says I will need to know this for when I have a family of my own. My cheeks burn red when she talks this way. Not because I am embarrassed, but because I feel woefully guilty. The letter from Albania arrived Monday. The envelope was stiff cardboard, so the photos would not bend. All my clothes have been made by my mother. They are not the same as the clothes the other girls wear here. I cannot tell her that. I look different. I sound different. I dress different. My skirts reach down below my knee to mid-calf, and my tops are buttoned up around my neck. Sometimes I long to wear loose t-shirts, jeggings and high boots, but we are not allowed here. My father and mother think it is important that myself and my sisters remain discreet, conservative and demure in this new country. He does not trust this new land. He rants about the Western world. It is mad, he says. No values, no culture and no roots. He is horrified by the clothes my classmates wear after school. You girls must, my father proclaims, be even more careful here not to attract attention. I am not to have any conversations with boys or men without my parents being present. My mother looks at the ground when she walks with my father. He is always telling me to lower my eyes. I laugh to myself sometimes when I hear him instructing myself and my sisters. What is going to happen if I look ahead? Will the sky fall down on me? What will I see that is so dangerous? Maybe he is afraid I will see the life I cannot have. The young career guidance teacher in school tells us that we can be anything we want. A kaleidoscope of choice, dazzling but fascinating too. I know my father is trying to prepare me for what is to come. He misses Albania and wants to rear us as if we still lived there. The borders of our country start at our red front door. Each day I step over the threshold, I am back in Albania. I watch the Irish mothers. They wave their shiny, straightened manes around, wear pink lipstick, black eyeliner, and their cheeks are glossy. Some of them look like models from magazines. My mother wraps a dark scarf around her jet-black wavy hair and long, graceful neck. No makeup. Her beautiful green eyes see only the grey stones and gravel underfoot. Her face is closed. She walks in silence. I must do the same. It is the first hot summer we've had in Ireland since we arrived. I think it must be the wettest place on earth sometimes. Today is the day of my 16th birthday. I can hear my mother downstairs baking. She sings when she bakes. As the yeast works and the dough rises, her songs become stronger and fuller too. It is to be a traditional birthday. I am to have a cake and two friends over. One Albanian friend and an Italian girl from school. We will wait for my father to come home later, and the family will sing happy birthday to me after dinner. I haven't slept for the last week. Not because I am excited. No. It is not a sweet 16. It is a shit 16. I am not naive enough. If I were more like the Irish girls in my class, I would be better off. They have romantic ideas about love. I cannot afford such luxuries. I can hear the hum of the Singer sewing machine, my mum's foot to the pedal, up and down, accelerating in the room below me, every stitch piercing, tightening its grip on me. I have done a fitting. That awful, crushing, crazy corset, flattening me down. Fucking hell! I have even learned to curse well in English. My mother is at it again. Whirring machine, singing loudly. Oblivious. The duvet is big and soft. If I pull it right over my head, I might be able to disappear. Puff. Gone. Imahe is the Irish word for it. The dress she is working on is expensive. Transparent lace with an embroidered bodice of Albanian roses. Blossoms of bondage. The envelope has been standing like a lighthouse beacon on the mantelpiece all week, screaming silently to me. I own you. I have not looked in it. We are all agreed that my mum's dinner was wonderful, a feast. I think of the fattened calf story the Irish priest told the girls in school last week. My mother has shed tears during the singing when we cut the cake. My father has made a speech to us all, how he will be losing a daughter but gaining a new family. This is our last birthday together for me as a child. I am now a young woman. Everybody claps and raises their glasses. My brother and sisters are told to leave the room after dinner. My mum carries the envelope into the kitchen and hands it to my father. He is covered in dust from his day at the buildings, and he coughs over the words. I realise he too is upset. Always remember the family who reared you, he says, lifting out the cardboard wallet with a black and white picture. Be careful, my mother scolds him, as the building dust settles across the shiny surface like the layer of icing sugar on my birthday cake. I take the photo in my hands and blow lightly through my tears, holding it close to my face, forcing my eyelids open to see it. A grimy, smudged picture. A weathered older man. My future husband stares back at me.
That was Tying the Knot by Claire O'Reilly, read by Aileen Mithen and produced by Aoife Ní Cormhaigh. A shortlisted entry from the 2014 RTE Radio Francis McManus Short Story Competition. The series of this year's 25 shortlisted stories continues tomorrow night with Mrs. Ledbetter by Patrick Talbot, read by Katrina Ní Vorahú. The shortlisted stories of this year's competition can be heard on the programme website on rte.ie/radio1. The series producer of the Francis McManus Short Story Competition is Cliona Ní Onlúin.